Welcome, friends of wildlife, to Protect Our Wildlife's very first podcast, Untamed. I am Brenna Galdenzi, and I am the president and co-founder of Protect Our Wildlife, Vermont's number one all-volunteer wildlife protection nonprofit organization. I am very excited to start what will be a number of podcasts on wildlife issues. The animals only have us, and we take being their voice seriously. And for our first guest today, I cannot think of someone who has a more powerful voice for animals than Dr. Peggy Larson. She will be joining me today to talk about trapping. Welcome, Peggy.
How do you do?
Peggy is a legend in Vermont. I mean, if you live in Vermont and you love animals and the name Dr. Peggy Larson is unfamiliar to you, then you have not been paying attention. Peggy has been known for decades. It's her work in protecting a variety of different animals, whether it's cats and dogs, farmed animals, horses, you name it. Her background includes practice as both a large animal and small animal veterinarian, worked internationally on ending rodeo animal abuse, worked with the media on animal abuse issues, worked with the police on animal abuse and neglect cases right here in Vermont, and she's treated cats and dogs caught in traps. We chose the topic of trapping for our first episode because this is an activity that flourishes in the darkness. If more people were aware of what trapping entails, we really do believe its days would be numbered. I just want to quickly go over some of the most basic components of trapping. We could talk probably for hours about trapping and the trapping myths and why people trap, but we're going to try to keep at least this first episode down to about 45 minutes to an hour. But the three most common types of traps used in Vermont are the steel-jawed leg hole trap, which is essentially nothing more than a baited hunk of metal that's left in the woods, sometimes buried by some dirt or leaf debris. And when an unsuspecting animal inspects the bait, either with its leg or paw or even its nose, the body part becomes painfully ensnared between the metal jaws of the trap. Another type of commonly used trap in Vermont is the body-crushing conibear trap. And a lot of times people think that a conibear trap is a bear trap. And conibear is just the brand of the trap. But they are body gripping or body crushing kill traps. They close on an animal with, I want to say, 60 to 90 pounds of pressure per square inch. And it's designed to close on an animal's neck. But it doesn't always kill an animal instantly. It really all depends on what part of the trap the animal, what part of the animal's body the trap closes on. So that kill trap could catch an animal by the leg or the tail or by the head, which would result in not a quick kill, but hours, even days of prolonged suffering. And the last kind of trap that are used in Vermont are colony sets. And these are typically live cage traps that are set underwater to collect and trap multiple animals at once who are then drowned. And these colony or submersion sets are normally used for muskrats. So we hear a lot in Vermont about the leg hole trap, justifiably so. But there are two other types of traps that are used here in Vermont quite often. So getting down to the interview and appreciating that Peggy has taken her time to speak with me today, thank you again. And truly, I could not think of a better person to join me today to talk about trapping. So I guess for starters, Peggy, how did you first learn about trapping?
Well, Brenna, I hate to admit this, but during the time that I was in high school, I was a trapper. I trapped muskrats because the fur for the muskrats was pretty valuable back in those days. And that was one way that us kids could make some money. So my brother and I, we both trapped and hunted. But both my brother and I have certainly changed since those days. But that's how my introduction to trapping was. I was a trapper. And so I understand the leg hole trap. especially yeah. because that's the one I used. And as time went on, of course, I learned more about animals as I went to vet school, and that they feel pain just like every other animal. And of course, trapping is a very, very painful process.
And unlike you, Peggy, you know, I really was pretty much unaware of trapping up until about 11 years ago. And mm-hmm. I know I've mentioned this before, and I'll mention it again. You know, I was looking through a volunteer manual for another animal nonprofit that I started volunteering with here back in 2010. And they covered, you know, issues from the importance of spaying and neutering your dogs and cats to a variety of different animal protection issues. And one of their focuses was the cruelties involved with trapping. And as I was thumbing through the manual, I came across this photo of this beautiful, majestic bobcat looking at the camera with these frightened eyes. And there was a man standing behind the bobcat, and the bobcat's paw was bloodied, and there was some blood spattering in the snow. And I really had no idea what I was looking at. I was just at that time learning. And I remember I looked to the person who was mentoring me from that nonprofit animal group. And I said, you know, I really hope that the game warden was called and this poor bobcat was suffering, you know, what happened here? And the person looked at me and said, you know, Brenna, you've got a lot to learn because everything in that photo is completely legal. And not only is it legal, it's endorsed by the State Fish and Wildlife Department. And that's a leg hole trap on that bobcat's paw. So that really kind of set me on my path. So I think we each bring such a different backgrounds as to, you know, what got us here at this point and why we speak out against the cruelties of trapping. And, you know, I know you've assisted law enforcement in the past on cruelty to animal or neglect cases, Peggy. And, you know, as we both know, traps by nature inflict prolonged and intentional suffering upon the trapped animal. And that should qualify as cruelty to animals, right? Yet it's not, because activities that are under the jurisdiction of Vermont Fish and Wildlife, like trapping, are exempt from the cruelty to animals statute. So that just blows my mind, because if, you know, we did that to a dog or a cat or another animal, I mean, it certainly qualifies, right? I mean, it's prolonged suffering inflicted upon an animal. What are your thoughts about that, Peggy, about, you know, trapping being exempt from Vermont's cruelty to animals statute?
Well, Brenna, as you know, I graduated from law school and I spent 2 years in the criminal court. So I have some idea about how law is enacted and applied. And the application of law when it comes to animals is extremely convoluted. Agricultural animals are often exempt. Certainly animals that are hunted are exempt. There doesn't seem to be any correlation with reality when it comes to enacting and enforcing laws that protect these wild animals, because they feel just as much as a cat or a dog would feel. For instance, in rodeo, if you took and roped a dog and dragged it across the arena like you do with a calf, you'd be in jail. That would be animal abuse. And so the problem is with the statutes that they just don't cover animals that are hunted or trapped because they're exempt. And they shouldn't be exempt, because cruelty laws should be based on the pain that's inflicted in animals and the stress that's inflicted in these animals. But it seems like when it comes to the law, these particular aspects, which are pain and suffering, are just ignored.
And I've always thought, you know, the difference really between trapping and, let's say, hunting, right, is that if you're hunting, you're hopefully taking an informed shot and you're killing an animal, hopefully quickly, not always. But unlike hunting, you know, traps are, you know, by their very design, designed to inflict prolonged suffering. You know, you have a leg hole trap that slams shut on an animal's paw or other body part, and that animal, as you know, Peggy, remains in that trap for 24 hours or longer. I mean, the law in Vermont is that trappers are required to check their land traps every calendar day. But we know that a lot of times, you know, these traps are set on private land, you know, hundreds of acres of farmland. You know, who's going to know if there's a fox or a bobcat or, you know, a coyote languishing in that trap for days? It's virtually impossible to enforce these laws.
A friend of mine found a big white owl in a trap down at Ripton, where he had his summer home. He said it must have been in there for a long period of time, because he said from the looks of it, it probably died from starvation or dehydration. One of the problems that I've seen with trapping is that the traps aren't checked often enough. We had a cat come into my clinic that must have been in a trap probably 4 or 5 days, maybe a week. It was extremely dehydrated. All the muscle was rotting around where the trap was ensnaring the leg. The bone was broken. The eyes were all sunken in from dehydration. And I couldn't save this cat. I put her on fluids. I amputated the leg. And she didn't make it. So one of my problems, well, there's several problems with trapping aside from even the pain and injuries that are inflicted on these animals. Another one is that these, not like hunting. If you're going deer hunting, you're going to shoot a deer. If you're trapping, only one out of three animals is the target animal. So you're getting animals that can be endangered, or animals that can be somebody's pet. The trap is basically, the trap is indiscriminate. So this is another one of the issues with trapping, aside from the fact that the traps aren't checked often enough. It's that these traps are indiscriminate. So other species can also be killed that shouldn't be.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned the owl that was trapped in what was either probably a leg hole trap or.
Yes.
You know, trappers are not even required to report when they trap an owl or an eagle or a hawk or any other number of non-targeted species. Up until just recently, trappers weren't even required to report when they trap someone's dog or cat. Thankfully, we worked on legislation back in 2018 that now requires that if a trapper does trap a dog or cat, that the trapper is required to notify a game warden. But then again, you know, who knows if that even happens. So you're absolutely right, Peggy. In addition to, you know, the cruelty and the prolonged suffering that these traps inflict, you know, they are by design non-selective. And we see that happening all of the time. I came across a photo that a trapper posted on Facebook. It was a year or two ago. And he had caught a frog in a small leg hole trap that was probably set for a mink, I would assume. You know, turtles are caught in Vermont in those Conibear kill traps. So there's a lot of collateral damage. And the industry, or Vermont Fish and Wildlife, calls it, you know, an incidental take. So if you set a baited leg hole trap for a coyote and you end up trapping, you know, an eagle, you know, they call that an incidental take. And that to me just seems very, I don't know, very callous. I think it's more than an incidental take. It's a very real problem. And we really don't know the scope of the problem because reporting is not required.
Well, Brenna, killing two out of three animals, or trapping two out of three animals that are the non-target animals, is hardly non-incidental.
That's right.
You're only catching one out of three that is the target animal. So that's hardly two out of three that aren't, is not non-incidental.
Right.
That's just ridiculous.
Something else to mention, Peggy, if you remember Protect Our Wildlife earlier this year, we had a petition that we brought to the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department and board that would have required or that would have prohibited trappers from using visual bait on their land traps. So again, if a trapper is setting a trap for a coyote and they bait that trap or the area of the trap with, let's say, you know, a deer leg or meat, you know, that's how bald eagles and other raptors get caught. And the state of Maine does not allow visual bait. And we asked if Vermont could follow Maine's lead in that area to hopefully cut down on the number of incidental takes of raptors. And unfortunately, they denied, you know, that minor, you know, proposal that would have possibly reduced the amount of this quote unquote incidental take. You know, speaking of the dogs and cats that you've treated in traps, Peggy, there's obviously injuries that, you know, are visible to the naked eye. You know, I've seen just awful photos of there was a Vermont cat who was caught actually in a Conibear kill trap, and it caught the animal by the leg, and the animal ended up losing his leg. It was amputated. But then again, there's a lot of injuries that animals sustain that aren't necessarily visible to the naked eye. And some of those, you know, dislocated joints, broken teeth, things of that nature. How would, let's say, if a trapper caught a bobcat out of season in a trap set for a coyote, and a bobcat and a trapper released that bobcat, how do we know, Peggy, that bobcat hasn't sustained, you know, injuries that might make it really difficult for that animal to survive post-release? And what kind of injuries could that animal have?
Well, Brenna, in the first place, if he's going to release, he's a trapper. He's not a veterinarian. He's not looking at this leg to see whether or not it's broken.
Right.
So he could release this bobcat and the leg could be broken. Depending upon how long it was in the trap, there certainly could be muscle damage due to the lack of the blood flow. The trap shuts off the blood supply, so the muscle dies because it doesn't have the nutrition it needs from the blood flow. So you can have muscle damage. You can have tendon damage. You can have damage to the animals internally because of they fight. They try to get out, and they're thrashing around. Definitely, their teeth could be damaged because they're trying to get they're chewing on the trap in order to try to release their leg. And fur covers, it's just like in the rodeo when you drive spurs into the shoulders of a horse, you don't see the damage because the hair covers it. Well, it's just like that with an animal that's trapped. You don't see the damage because the fur covers it. You can imagine the amount of hemorrhage under the skin in some of these cases. So yeah. Once the animal is released, it's difficult to know whether that animal will survive. It all depends on the extent of the injuries.
Right. And as someone, you know, who we both have worked with, you know, cat rescue, domestic cat rescue in the past. And, you know, I know someone who has, you know, handled a 9-pound feral cat that we might be catching in a humane trap, you know, to spay or neuter. I mean, those are fierce little animals. You know, can you imagine releasing a bobcat, a wild, you know, 30-pound bobcat from a leg hole trap? I'm not even sure how a trapper would be able to even do that successfully without, you know, harming him or herself, and also certainly not harming the bobcat. So just the fact that, you know, these animals are trapped out of season, most oftentimes in sets for coyotes, because coyote season runs right at the beginning of trapping season, the fourth Saturday of October, and runs right through the end of December. And bobcat trapping season isn't until December. So bobcats are surely caught in sets for coyotes. Again, you know, trappers are not required to, not only are they not required to enlist the assistance of a veterinarian to release the bobcat, they aren't even required to report when they trap, you know, one of these non-targeted species and release the animal. So again, there's major concern of how many of these animals are being released from these traps and, you know, not being able to survive for a number of those examples that you gave us, whether it's from, you know, broken teeth or, you know, severed tendons, a host of different horrors that could happen while they were restrained in that trap.
Well, you have to think about another thing too, and you briefly kind of alluded to it. And that is if this trapper is, you know, by law, he's supposed to release this animal because it's not in the season And he can't release it. If he tries to step on the trap to open it, then the animal, you know, turns to bite him. It's not going to take very long before he just takes and either shoots that animal or bangs it over the head, whatever method he's using to kill the animal. And there's a problem there because I don't know, unless he had some way of opening that trap, it's going to be pretty hard for him to keep from getting bitten. Afraid, and it's in a lot of pain, so it's going to react pretty violently.
And we know the term, Peggy, right? SSS, and that's a term that was coined, or that's a term that's used by trappers. And SSS stands for shoot, shovel, and shut up. So yep. we know what happens a lot of times when trappers, catch these non-targeted or incidental takes. They realize that it's bad publicity. When people find out that they trapped a barred owl or a bald eagle. So, you know, that's a term that they use. That's not a term that we came up with. You have to wonder how much of that is going on, and that's something that, you know, that we'll never know about. You know, I want to talk a bit about the meeting that you and I attended back in 2016. I can't believe it's already been 4 years. And for our listeners who were not around at that time, a trapper had submitted a petition to the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Board and the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department. And this trapper was seeking to extend trapping seasons on bobcats and river otters, you know, two probably the most iconic Vermont species that I think people would love to see more of, and protect our wildlife. We fought that petition, and the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Board held a meeting to discuss the petition out in Woodbury. I think it was Woodbury, Vermont, in a very remote location. It was a dirt road, very difficult to get to, but we were joined by, I want to say it was close to 100 people. And you were one of those people that attended with me, Peggy, where we were opposing this petition to extend bobcat and otter trapping season. And you had an encounter there with a trapper. And that encounter has really stuck with you. And can you share that with us? Because I really think it helps kind of frame this kind of mentality that we're dealing with.
Well, yes, I was there with a friend. Walter and I went to attend the meeting to, see what was going to happen and to lend our voice into supporting getting some changes made. And as the meeting was closing down, Walter and I were sitting close to the exit, and this trapper stomped out. He glared at Walter and I, and he said, "Animals don't feel pain anyway." And he was out the door before I had a chance to, close my mouth in wonderment how in the world anybody could even think of such a thing. And so that kind of stuck with me it'll stick with me forever, actually. But how in the world can any thinking human being think that an animal does not feel pain? They have a central nervous system that's very similar to ours. Back when I was working in research with the medical school at Ohio State, my boss, who was a world-renowned neurosurgeon, used to take me along with him to look at brain autopsies. So I saw brain cancer, I saw brain injuries, I saw strokes. And as he was going over the brain of the human, he was telling me all of the different parts and what each part did. Well, meanwhile, I'm over in the vet school studying animal brains, and guess what? There was no difference. The only difference was the size. So all of the receptor sites, all of the pain sites, all of the thought processing sites, everything is very, very similar in a human brain as it is in an animal brain. So this was a real wake-up call to begin to understand about animals and how they have pain, how they have emotions, how they have fear, whatever. They have the similar same things that I do. So how in the world could any thinking human being ever think that an animal did not feel pain? Pain is part of the protective mechanism when you're a wild animal. if you can't feel pain, then you're not going to feel when some predator bites you or whatever, or you break a leg when you're running and, you know, fall into a hole or something like that. Pain is part of a protection mechanism so that you avoid pain. So this was so shocking to me. I can still hear that voice. Animals don't feel pain anyway. It was just shocking.
Yeah. And you have to wonder how someone gets to have that kind of outlook. And I always think that, you know, we have impressionable children who are indoctrinated at a very young age into viewing these animals as nothing more as, you know, widgets, commodities. And, you know, I think when you're taught early on, you know, that when you set that leg hole trap and you go out the next morning to check it and you see, you know, a frightened little fox looking back at you with, you know, its paw crushed, you know, it's much easier to continue on with what you're doing. And, you know, following that tradition that maybe, you know, your grandfather and your father did and not really question it. It makes it much easier, I think, to just write it off and say, oh, well, they can't feel pain. I truly do think that, you know, a lot of it is just this early indoctrination in teaching children to be desensitized to another living being. And seeing, you know, an animal that you are subjecting to, again, I want to use the term prolonged suffering, because that really differentiates it from a lot of other methods of taking animals. So I wonder if it's a form of brainwashing. And I think when trappers might start questioning the ethics of trapping, you know, that might start causing them to have to question, you know, well, my grandfather did it and my father did it. Does that mean that, you know, they're not ethical? I think we need to look at the human aspect of this and try to understand, you know, why people in this day and age and in 2020, when we know all we know about animals and their ability to feel pain and have a wide range of emotion, to continue on with something like this. And I think tradition is a very, very real and a very deeply held emotion that is difficult to penetrate.
Well, you know, when back when I was a trapper, I was focused on catching the animal because I was focused more on, my gosh, I'm going to have, you know, some spending money. I didn't think that much about what the animal was going through. I was looking at, my goal was to catch this animal and to use it as income. And I wonder sometimes if the focus isn't in the right place. I wonder if they're so focused on catching this animal that they don't think about what this animal is going through. They're thinking more of what their object is to kill this animal for fur or whatever. And they're not thinking about what the animal itself is going through. All they're doing is looking for what their objective was, which was to catch it.
And, you know, when you were trapping, Peggy, you know, years ago, there might have been a market to sell the fur, but now the fur market is so depressed that trappers will readily admit that they're losing money right now trapping. No one is trapping to make money. So, you know, those excuses that were used in the past, you know, can really no longer, they no longer hold water. And I do believe that it is a challenge that they, you know, that they have, you know, to trap these animals. And actually, a Vermont trapper who teaches Trapper Ed, he has said before that, you know, he doesn't trap to make money. He likes to, quote unquote, match wits with critters. So I do think there's an aspect of, you know, trying to set the trap out there and go out there the next day and see what you caught. And what I find really uplifting and hopeful is that there's a new generation of kids and adults as well who are engaging in what's called camera trapping. And we hosted a presentation earlier this year out in Winooski. And basically, it's setting trail cameras and learning how to, quote unquote, trap animals on your trail camera. So it's the same thing, you know, where you're positioning your cameras a certain place and, you know, going out the next day and checking your trail camera and see what you caught. And, you know, you share the videos and you share the photos, whether it be, a black bear or a fox or a bobcat. People are catching, you know, so many amazing animals on these trail cameras, and they're sharing these images, with the world. And, you know, it's such a better feeling to see photos of these animals flourishing, you know, in their natural habitats than seeing them, you know, caught, in traps and photographed, you know, before they're killed. So, I am excited, to continue to promote that, again, called camera trapping. And, hopefully that'll continue to gain momentum among our younger generation.
Well, I think this is a good idea because it also gives these kids or these young people a chance to socialize a little bit. When you're trapping something, you trap it, you catch it, you kill it, maybe you take a photo of it or a video or something, and that's about it. But this might lead to discussion of there's this kind of animal in this area, and maybe we should be seeing if we could see one in person. And, you know, there's just a little bit more sensibility about looking at a camera trap rather than a regular trap.
Absolutely. And something I can't believe I forgot to mention is, you know, talking about these animals who are caught in leg hole traps and how they meet their end. Peggy, you and I didn't discuss, you know, speaking of cruelty to animals and how, you know, this doesn't fall under that statute. There are no requirements in Vermont as to how a trapper must kill an animal. So, you know, you would think that maybe a gunshot might be the quickest and least inhumane method of killing a trapped animal, but that's not often the way that trappers kill the trapped animal. Trappers will choke out the animal. They bludgeon the animal. Another method is stomping on the animal's chest to crush the heart and lungs. These are all drowning is another method of killing the trapped animal. So these are all legal methods of killing trapped animals. And these are methods that are used. Sometimes, you know, trappers will say, oh, well, I don't want to waste a bullet, you know, on a trapped raccoon. Or there's some areas where they may not be able to dispatch their firearm. They also talk about not wanting a bullet hole in the pellet, in the pelt. So there's a variety of different reasons why they may choose not to shoot the animal and instead use one of these other methods that are just absolutely gruesome. So I think sometimes we focus too much of our discussions around trapping on, you know, the actual trap itself and what the traps do, but we don't focus enough on, you know, what happens when that trapper finally does show up to kill that animal. You know, too often these animals aren't even given a humane death. And I think a lot of people might be surprised to hear that there are no laws regulating the method of killing trapped animals.
Can you imagine the public outcry if the law went the other way and let you kill your dog by banging him on the head or choking him, right, or something like that, or your cat? Well, the whole state would be in an uproar. And yet, what's the difference between a fox and a dog and a coyote, or a cat and a bobcat? I mean, they're all they have the same anatomical structures, they have the same brain structures, they suffer pain just as equally. I mean, it's just ridiculous to allow this to happen. So many times the law, it could be so much better and it could be enforced better, but it just isn't.
I remember back in the 80s, I think a lot of us will remember the seal pups that were clubbed for fur, right? We see those images, imprinted in our minds and how horrific that is. And I think that happened in Canada. And there was a huge advertising or marketing campaign around that because it was just so brutal. And to think that that's happening right now in our woods, you know, on our public lands. You know, trapping is allowed on public lands and our state parks and national wildlife refuges. You know, these types of atrocities are happening right here. And, you know, too often we kind of, you know, look at what's happening in other countries and, you know, focusing on animal cruelties elsewhere. But if people were to, you know, spend more time focusing on the animal cruelties that are happening right here and, you know, working with legislators and within your communities to educate, you know, we can really change things, hopefully. And I want to loop back because as you and I often do, Peggy, I mean, you and I have talked about this so many times, but every time we talk about it, I mean, we could talk and talk and talk. And we forgot to mention the outcome of that Fish and Wildlife meeting that we went to back in 2016. So the trapper was trying to extend the trapping seasons on bobcats and otters. And we did successfully fight the extension to bobcat trapping season. But the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department did approve the extension to the otter trapping season. And they actually did that despite their own best science, which left us all a bit rattled. So I want to say we had about 100 people there with us, Peggy. We also had a petition that had thousands of signatures. But, you know, this was just, and I think we'll do a podcast in the future informing people, you know, how wildlife policy is made. But this was probably one of the most blatant examples of Fish and Wildlife catering to a special interest group and ignoring the many, many more Vermonters who would love to see a river otter alive and in the wild, you know, than dead in a conibear trap. And in addition to, you know, bobcats and otters, the other animals that are legally trapped in Vermont and they're considered fur bearers are beavers, gray and red foxes, fisher, raccoons, skunks, muskrat, mink, and coyotes. And I don't think I'm forgetting an animal, but I think that's it. But of course, like we mentioned before, you know, these animals also result in the capture of non-targeted species every year in Vermont. And we do our best to track that through submitting public records requests to the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department. Now, we only gain access to the information that they collect. And because most non-target captures are not, trappers are not required to report it, you know, we don't have a full picture. But the picture that we do have has been pretty grim. Last year, I think it was last year or the year before, a trapper trapped a black bear in a leg hole trap. Again, imagine how does one release a black bear from a leg hole trap? Talk about releasing a bobcat. I can't even imagine how that was done.
I'm surprised that black bear just didn't tear loose the anchor that the trap was set with, because something of that size could have pulled the trap and wound up on his leg for the rest of his life. We had that problem here in Williston. Somebody saw a coyote with a trap, or was it a fox? It was either a fox or a coyote that was dragging a trap.
Yes.
He had pulled loose. I think you were involved in that, actually.
Yes, that was last summer. It was a pitiful scene. Somebody was trapping out of season, which is also legal in Vermont. A lot of people don't know. You know, we've got the legal trapping season, right, that runs end of October through the end of March. But trapping occurs year-round under the dangerously broad killing wildlife and defensive property. So somebody must have set a leg hole trap to trap a fox that might have been getting at his chickens or what have you, and didn't anchor the trap. And this poor little red fox was seen walking around or hobbling around Williston with a leg hole trap attached to her leg. And who knows if she was able to survive. I'm thinking most likely not, between gangrene and whatever else.
So, yes, I doubt she survived too. You know, as a veterinarian, I've treated animals in traps and I've seen the damage that's done to their tissues and their legs. And I doubt very much this little fox would have survived terribly long.
So there is so much more to cover about trapping, Peggy. And, you know, this was our very first episode of Untamed. And again, you know, you were the number one person, and not just my mind, but the entire Protect Our Wildlife Board's mind as to who we wanted to have join us. And I do think that we should probably do episode 2 about trapping to cover all of the different areas that the public is just largely unaware of. So in the meantime, until our next podcast, Peggy, are there any closing thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is when you know that somebody is trapping, let's say you're a family, you live in Williston, you got your life, you're busy with your job, your kids are in school and stuff, so you don't pay much attention, but you have a pet dog or you have a pet cat. I think that people in Vermont, the family people, those who have pets, need to start thinking about the fact that these wild animals, these coyotes and these bobcats, have the same sensations and sensory mechanism that your dog and your cat does. And I think the average person needs to start thinking about what happens to these wild animals that are caught in traps, because if their dog or their cat was caught in a trap, it's identically the same. The pain is the same. The broken bones are the same. The fear is the same. And I think it's time for people to start thinking in terms of these wild animals being very similar to your pets. I think that's one way to start with the idea of getting other people involved in this, is to say, look, what would you do if your pet was caught in a trap? There was an interesting article written by a man in Maine who had been a trapper, and he finally had given it up, and he saw a different way of thinking about trapped animals. He said over the course of his lifetime, he had trapped something like 17 dogs and 30-some cats, and he said most of them he killed. So here's a trapper that admitted to all of these animals that he had trapped. And I think it's time that the public starts looking at trapped animals in the same way that they look at their pets.
I absolutely agree. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. I really do think that the age of social media is going to be the death of trapping. I think for far too long, the general public wasn't able to see the face of a frightened fox or even a beaver or bobcat, you know, in a trap looking at the camera. And it's hard not to imagine your dog or cat, you know, in that same trap, in that same awful situation. So, you know, we can have Fish and Wildlife tell us, you know, that trapping is necessary and that it's not inhumane. And they might have gotten away with that, you know, pro-trapping propaganda, you know, a decade ago or even 5 years ago. But, you know, as the public becomes more aware and sees these photos and sees the video, there's no amount of pro-trapping rhetoric that will ever be more powerful than the image of a frightened, injured, wild animal looking at you, begging for help, and no help to be found. So I really do think that the tide is turning, and we will continue to share with you, our listeners, the realities about trapping and helping you figure out how you can be a wildlife advocate and how you can get involved. So Peggy, I could talk to you all night, but I can't believe it's already been 45 minutes. So I would just like to close this particular podcast by asking people to visit our website if they have lingering questions about trapping in Vermont. Maybe we didn't, you know, cover a certain aspect of trapping that you have questions about. Our website has so much information, and it's specific to Vermont as well. We have a section on trapping and pets as well. It's protectourwildlifevt.org, and you want to go to the link. I believe there's a drop down that says Our Work, and then there's a link that says Trapping. And my hope is that we will be able to come back with episode 2 or 3 or 4 and talk more about those areas that we just didn't have time for. And I would like to ask all of you if you have any recommendations for a future podcast or anything that you would like us to cover. Please email us at info@protectourwildlifevt.org. We're doing this for you, and we want to know if this was helpful, what we could do differently in the future. We want to hear from you. So I guess until next time, thank you, Peggy, and we will be reaching out to you all again soon. Thanks.